Welcome to Prognosis. I'm Laura Carlson. It's day 70 since coronavirus was declared a global pandemic. Our main story? Drug makers around the world are racing to develop an effective vaccine for COVID-19 and stem the outbreak. But some countries are vying for early, and in some cases exclusive, access to a vaccine. That could leave poorer countries behind, and the prospect of a two-tiered world is sparking outrage. But first, here's what happened today. Wall Street is trying to get people back to the office, but with lots of room to spread out. Big banks are opening up huge offices meant for thousands, with plans to staff them with a small fraction of that number. Some displaced employees will relocate to suburban outposts, and some will work from home indefinitely. JP Morgan Chase expects to keep its offices half full at most for the foreseeable future. And Goldman Sachs is reopening its Paris office, but maxing out at 20% staff on any given day. Citigroup is considering leasing offices in New Jersey and the New York suburbs of Westchester County and Long Island. In Brazil, which has become a coronavirus hotspot, the health ministry released a protocol recommending all COVID-19 patients use chloroquine from the first day of symptoms. The government also recommends the use of sister drug, hydroxychloroquine, along with the antibiotic azithromycin. Clinical trials have failed to show that chloroquine is effective for fighting COVID-19, and some trials were halted when patients developed potentially fatal irregular heart rates. Since the start of the pandemic, President Jair Bolsonaro has often touted the anti-malarial medication. Trump has also backed it, recently going so far as saying he has been taking hydroxychloroquine as a precautionary measure. And in China, doctors are seeing signs the coronavirus may be changing. The virus appears to manifest differently among patients in a new cluster of cases than it did in the original outbreak. If the pathogen is mutating in unknown ways, it could complicate efforts to stamp it out. Patients in this latest outbreak in northeastern China appear to carry the virus for longer and take longer to test negative. But scientists don't know for sure whether the virus is changing in significant ways or if doctors are seeing differences because they are able to observe patients more thoroughly and from an earlier stage than in Wuhan. And now, our main story. COVID-19 has sparked an unprecedented mobilization of researchers looking to create a drug that can prevent the virus. Globally, developers are working on as many as 100 experimental vaccines. But as nations rush to ease lockdowns and restart economies, concerns are growing that some will try to secure early supplies of a vaccine for themselves. Bloomberg reporter James Payton recently wrote about an international organization that's aiming to improve access to vaccines, the strongest bulwark against the spread of disease. I spoke to him from his home in London. If and when a COVID-19 vaccine becomes available, what are the current plans for how it will be made available or distributed around the world?
Yeah, well, this is one of the key questions right now. And obviously, the big concern is that some countries will rush ahead of, especially wealthier countries, will rush ahead of poorer regions and try to secure those vaccine supplies early. So right now, there are a number of groups that are discussing various financing tools and other measures to try to ensure that if there is a vaccine, when there's a vaccine, hopefully there will be, that it will be deployed in an equitable and, you know, that it'll be deployed in an equitable way and widely around the world, because that's really the key, not just from an ethical standpoint, but also from a scientific one.
And so have some vaccine makers or folks that are at work developing a vaccine, have they promised that some countries will receive the vaccine first?
Yeah, that's a good question. Companies have started to talk about this issue. AstraZeneca, the UK pharmaceutical giant, is helping the University of Oxford with its experimental coronavirus vaccine. And AstraZeneca has said that it will make as many as 30 million doses of that vaccine available to the UK by September, actually, if it's successful. And the company has indicated that the UK will be prioritized, that the UK will get access to this vaccine first if they are able to successfully deliver one. Other companies too, the CEO of Sanofi, the French pharmaceutical giant, told us recently that the US would likely be vaccinated first because of support it's received from the U.S. government. But a lot of these commitments remain vague. So there are a number of factors that make this a tricky question for the big pharmaceutical companies and the universities working on these vaccines.
So is every country just trying to get its hands on a vaccine first, or are some countries being more collaborative?
A number of countries have pledged and have committed to making vaccines broadly and universally available. The European Commission recently raised about $8 billion to focus on universal vaccine access and other ways of fighting COVID-19. So a number of world leaders, I think about 140 world leaders and nonprofits and other groups signed a letter last week calling for a so-called people's vaccine to have a free product that's available quickly for everyone. So this is really heating up as like a big issue for governments around the world.
From a medical perspective, what are some of the arguments for trying to make a vaccine universally available?
Yeah, it's a good question. I talked to the CEO of Gavi, Seth Berkley, and he notes that if you have perfect control of a virus in one country, but the nations surrounding you don't, that you're still at risk. The virus can continue to spread. Obviously, a virus doesn't respect borders. So if you look at other diseases, take measles, for instance, a vaccine was introduced in the 1960s, decades of progress against the highly contagious disease occurred after that. But the WHO, World Health Organization, as recently as last month, reported a significant rise in cases of measles in 2019 and warned of another potential resurgence in 2020 due to unvaccinated pockets of the population. So I think that underscores the need to immunize broadly and what can happen if you have those kinds of immunization gaps. So that's why organizations like Gavi are focused on, you know, getting vaccines distributed widely, again, not just from a moral standpoint, but they also say it's smart science.
But what are some of the practical hurdles in achieving this goal?
You know, I mentioned there are a number of financing tools that are under consideration. One is called an advanced market commitment. And basically that works. The idea is that governments will and other donors will commit funds to the vaccine makers, and the vaccine manufacturers on the other side of the equation will agree to provide their vaccines at prices that are affordable and sustainable. So it gives those companies assurance and clarity to go ahead with their development and manufacturing plans, and it brings relief to poorer countries that can't afford to pay the same prices as wealthier nations. Given the magnitude of this crisis, it'll be very difficult to get all the parties to line up, but those are some of the options under consideration.
Yeah, and I'd like to even dig deeper on that. In an ideal world, obviously, the vaccine would become immediately globally available to everyone. But how do you make the decision of, if you only have a certain amount of doses or a certain amount of vaccines, who gets those first those first doses?
It is a really tricky question, because if you're a particular government, from a political standpoint, your number one priority is to protect your own population. But, you know, this group Gavi, for instance, is focused primarily on getting vaccines initially to healthcare workers. But then again, it raises the question, if there's a vaccine in the US or the UK, you know, would those citizens be prioritized over healthcare workers in other countries? Because, you know, a lot of the people involved in this effort say that, you know, really the effort should be to get the vaccines to the people who are most vulnerable wherever they are.
How will what happens with the distribution of the coronavirus vaccine potentially affect how decisions get made about other vaccines, either in the future or that already exist?
When you look back, what people in this area are trying to avoid is what happened in 2009 with the swine flu pandemic. A number of wealthy countries rushed to reserve supplies in advance, leaving other nations behind. And while, you know, a number of these wealthy countries moved to donate doses to the developing world, critics say that happened too slowly. And so a lot of the experts are mindful of that and trying to avoid that scenario now in obviously a much more severe emergency for the world. But, you know, a lot of infectious disease experts and others say this won't be the last major epidemic that we're going to face. And, you know, however the world's response to this will be, you know, will be critical. I'm sure there'll be more lessons learned that can be applied to the significant outbreaks of the future as well.
That was James Payton in London. And that's our show today. For coverage of the outbreak from 120 bureaus around the world, visit Bloomberg.com/coronavirus. And if you like the show, please leave us a review and a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's the best way to help more listeners find our global reporting. The Prognosis Daily Edition is produced by Topher Forges, Jordan Gaspure, Magnus Henriksen, and me, Laura Carlson. Today's main story was reported by James Payton. Original music by Leo Sidran. Our editors are Francesca Levy and Rick Schein. Francesca Levy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts. Thanks for listening.